Have you ever wanted an instruction manual for your life?
Something that went over the stuff that isn't always obvious?
Or even some of the stuff that is?
My name is Sarah Ramsey. I'm a singer, voice, performance, and growth coach. And I've spent a lifetime open to the lessons behind our experiences and seeking out pathways to becoming more enlightened, better humans.
And I'm Dr. Stefan Rabnett. I've been a doctor of traditional Chinese medicine for over 20 years, and I'm also a Jay Shetty certified life coach. I've long been fascinated with our human superpowers, the ones we don't quite have the instruction manual for, and I'm forever curious about how we can unlock them.
Welcome to This Big Life podcast, where we have deeper conversations about the nature of existence, our place in it, and how we can leverage these things to create the life we want.
Basically, we're bringing the woo-woo to you. But don't worry, we don't take ourselves too seriously.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. We are here. We have a special guest, Miss Annika Buckle. Well, I guess not Miss, actually, but isn't that funny how you just default to say anyway? Annika Buckle, who I've known Annika for a couple of years from some past business crossovers, and she's become a lovely friend and has her own podcast now, which we'll get her to talk about a little bit, but it's called Meet Me in the Middle. And you should check that one out too, because it's fantastic. So thanks for joining us today, Annika.
Yay. Thank you. I can look right straight out of the bat. I can start my ranting because actually, have you ever noticed that all women don't get the same, regardless of married status,
yes,
shorthand that men do? So I actually prefer Ms. And I will call my daughter, yep, Ms. And I will call everyone else I know Ms. If even 30.
That's what I go by too.
Right? It's actually none of your business whether Buckle, yeah, is a married name or not for me. So that's what I taught my
age. So apologies. Maybe we should just like stop and start all over again.
No,
there's a lot contained in two letters. I love that. There's a lot contained in two letters, right? Because mm-hmm. I think because MS, including it's none of your business. I love that. I will always look at that differently now. Thank you, Annika.
This is what my 8-year-old will parrot back at me. Which one is it that means none of your business again, Mama? That's Ms. I'm Ms.
That is the best.
Yeah, so there you go.
Well,
you're welcome. Yeah. Mom, my work here is done. Nice talking to you guys today. I'm out of here.
It's been a lovely day. Thank you for joining us. Do you want to start off by telling us a little bit about your podcast, actually? Let's just go there.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks. It's been really fun. So a couple of girlfriends and I previously spent quite a bit of time like inside the wellness world. And as we kind of went through like the great deconstruction that has been like the last 3 years, I think for so many issues and so many people, we started to kind of feel this like real pull to unpolarize, if that is a word, if that makes sense. Because I think, especially in the wellness world, there's very often this like us or them. You're either, you know, with big pharma or you're, you know, into natural solutions and never the two shall meet. If you believe in one, you can't possibly believe in the other, where the reality is for us, and I think most people, I mean, living on like the crunchy West Coast anyway, I think there's space for both, for everyone. And I think the more we can come to that space of middle ground, whatever that looks like, I think can be really powerful. So our goal is just that we show that the middle ground can exist. You can, you know, both eat nutrient-dense food and vaccinate your kids. You can, you know, want to go see a chiropractor and also you know, believe in the power of antibiotics. You know, these things don't have to be mutually exclusive. There is room for everything. And I think that's actually one of the beautiful things of the times that we're living in, is there really is, we have all of these incredible advances of modern medicine, and we also have this very global reach of other modalities. And when we can use them to complement each other, I think that's where it really allows us to be in charge of our own health, and, you know, to not necessarily put aside things that are going to be very helpful on either side.
Yeah.
Wow. Well said. I love that.
Yeah. It's been really fun.
I love it. I've been a fan. I've been a listener, and so I recommend it to our listeners to go check that one out as well. It's called Meet Me in the Middle.
Thank you.
And that's awesome. So, I mean, I don't know if we've already jumped the gun there, but, you know, here, when we have guest episodes, we have not really settled on a term, but the term just might be three big things. But, I you know, that can be whatever that means to you. I feel like that's probably relevant. Yeah, right? So let's jump in. You want to share your three big things, and then we will go down rabbit holes as we go.
my favorite thing to do. I mean, that's essentially, most people I know, you know, talk about podcasting. It's like, basically, I just wanted an excuse to go down the rabbit hole and talk to other people about the things that I learn.
Yes.
Yeah. So my three big things a letter to my former self in a lot of ways, things that I wish I had have held on to or remembered, you know, as I went into my 20s, especially. And I think a lot of it is, you know, from the place of still learning and unlearning today. And actually, it's funny, because as I was kind of thinking about, you know, what we were going to talk about today and the pieces I was going to, you know, work with, the thing that kind of kept stressing me out is like, well, I'm going to have to introduce myself. I'm going to have to talk about myself. And I always get really nervous still to this day to do that in, you know, new company or mixed company, because I think, you know, my number one thing that I want to talk about today is like, you might not have a thing. I think capitalism wants us to put ourselves in a box of like, and I mean, this was very much for me. I'm a millennial, you know, my parents' generation. My mom was a teacher. She went through school. She became a teacher. She was a teacher her whole life. My dad was a teacher. Like, it was very linear, where I don't feel very linear, and I am not defined by my career. So the idea of like, you know, you've got to introduce yourself to somebody who doesn't know you, and you only have, you know, a minute to summarize yourself. Well, my labor is not in that. My paid labor is not in that summary. And I really feel like I spent a lot of my 20s spinning my wheels, like, what's my thing? And then I would find something and I would be really good at it and like really enjoy it for like 2 years. And then I'd be like, well, that's not my thing anymore.
Oh, you're my people.
So you might not, your thing might not be labor-based. You might have lots of things, and that's okay. No one thing has to define you, especially your career. And I think that can be a scary thing in our society, especially kind of in the, you know, quote unquote Western world, where it's okay that your career doesn't define you. It's okay that that's not who you are.
I love that.
Yeah, because I mean, there's so much, even just what you said, and just kind of relating to your, I think the podcast is what's right for you, and getting out of this age of definition that we've had, like leading up to this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can see the value in terms of, well, there's safety. If I'm that, then I always know I'm that and I can rely on that, but we're not that. And it's just something that we be or do and not something that defines us. And hearing you talk, I guess I look at the world and it's just like, yeah, it seems like that's kind of what we need more, is getting out of that definition and more into possibilities. Because when you're not defined, there's more possibilities. So I like that, because I think you're right. There is such pressure, you know, especially like when you're, you know, when you are younger, what are you going to be? You know, what's it going to be the thing? You know, even I ask that sometimes to, you know, my kids, you know, but it's still, it's a fluid thing, not a static thing. Yeah. And I love that.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny that you say that because I have an 8-year-old daughter, and she, this week in her classroom, she gets to be they call it star of the week. So she like makes a poster about herself, and she gets to like bring in her favorite book and they read part of it. And it's very sweet. But one of the questions on the form she had to fill out is, when I grow up, and she's like, well, I don't know what I'm going to be. She's been really like kind of anxious about it over the last couple of weeks. Like, well, but it doesn't have to be. You don't have to know. First of all, you're 8. Jesus Christ. You do not need to know what you're going to be when you grow up. And even if you do, you're probably not going to be that anyway.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And second of all, you can be 40 and not know. It's actually totally fine. And so we kind of, you know, I talked with her about the things that I've been working through myself. Isn't it funny? Our small people are just little mirrors of ourselves. But, mm-hmm. you know, who do you want to be? Not what do you want to do, but who do you want to be? Do you want to be kind? Do you want to, you know, read 100 books a year? Do you want to live in Vancouver? You know, what are the things about you? And she said, well, I want to own 10 wiener dogs. We own one wiener dog. I want to own 10 wiener dogs. I said, great. So she crossed out, you know, the B, and she just wrote, I will have 10 wiener dogs. Like, great.
Fantastic. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's you got a really dash awesome. On daughter.
But it's so true. Like, and I think we go through, well, we're all sort of in a general age range, let's say. We're going to put it as a general age range.
That's kind
of, you know, parents. What? We're all over 30.
Yes.
Yes.
We're all over 30 and under 50. We're in that.
Very specific. See, very
this
specific.
Is true.
But I think that as a you know, broader generational hat, I think that we have all come up in a space where our parents did one thing, and our people, there very few of them do one thing their whole life. Mm-hmm. You know, gone is the time in the 50s when you grew up and you were a company man and you were there from, you know, the end of school until retirement, and that was it. Most people I know have had a series of, not just a series of jobs, but a series of careers. Mm-hmm. And like, I know I've kind of gone through a bit of a struggle over the last couple of years trying to figure out what I want to be when I grow up, and not sure if it's what I've been doing or not. And
these are some of the great conversations you and I have had.
Exactly. This yep. is, it's so true. And I spent last year like really digging deep, searching, asking the questions. And funny enough, I actually came back full circle to sort of what I was doing anyway, which is great. But I also figured out which pieces I wanted to let go of along the way and mm-hmm. how I wanted to like develop that out. So it was a really useful time. But in that process, my husband said something to me. He's like, well, you know, you get really interested in this thing for a little while and then you're all gung-ho. And then it doesn't necessarily go where you want it to go, and then you change your mind and you go someplace completely different, and like at some point can we just settle on one thing? And it was a valid point from him, being my partner and the other earner in our uh-huh. house.
Yeah,
right? Like, okay, can we like pick a path and go more than 10 feet down the path? That is a totally valid point, and the answer is no.
Thank you for asking. Absolutely not.
No, exactly.
But I do. I love a good rabbit hole. I love getting really into something, learning so much about it. And then it's like, and that's as much as I want out of that, you know, pie. Now I want to go try a different flavor.
Well, and I think that's kind of the other piece of this is, you know, I will rail against capitalism probably excessively over the next, you know, 40 minutes. But this piece that we constantly have to be, everything has to be for a purpose. I think the gig economy has really only exacerbated this. Oh, you have something fun you like to do for a hobby, figure out how to monetize it. First of all, because we live in this bottomless pit of inflation right now. But second of all, because it's this like always better, bigger, faster, more, where sometimes like, I just want to learn about something for, you know, I want to do something for 2 years and then never do it again. I want to learn about something for 6 months and then never think about it again. And that's okay. I think there tends to be this value judgment, like, well, what was the point of that? Where the point doesn't have to be financial or monetary or even furthering your own success, quote unquote, whatever the fuck that looks like as a person.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The point was I was interested.
Yeah. I wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah. I've started describing myself as like an information hoarder.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, you're a Gemini. That fits.
Yeah.
I think it speaks to, you know, not what we do, but why we do things and the energy behind things. Mm-hmm. And we can really, again, get caught up in the title and that aspect. But and I just hearing you guys talk, it is true, because I think when we, even when we get into the why we do things, there's that external validation of, oh, you're supposed to, mm-hmm. oh, culture says this, oh, you got to monetize that, mm-hmm. or is this going to happen, or what, how is that going to lead? And so we get kind of pulled away from ourselves and kind of uses the outside metric to value kind of what we're doing, as opposed to just being like, hey, yeah, I'm interested. I don't know why. I'm just going to go, I'm going to turn left here. I'm going to see where it goes. And again, just listening to you guys talk, when I'm thinking about like asking my son, Leo, you know, not so much what he wants to be, but the qualities that, you know, are in some of the things that he likes. So like, he'll say like, oh, I want to be a vet. I want to be a pilot. I want to fly to Africa and treat animals. Like, this is what his mind is. So you can see like the common, like that helping, that freedom and focusing mm-hmm. on that, as opposed to the logistics of, okay, well, if you're going to be a vet, we got to start now and do the vet things and that type of aspect.
Make sure you take a science and
yeah, exactly. Right. Okay. Well, if you got, you know, like
when you're signing up for your kindergarten courses, make sure there's a life science course.
Well, even as it's crazy though, I don't like, as a tangent, even as parents, like we are picking a kindergarten. I never thought of picking a kindergarten would be stressful.
Oh my God.
But it's just like,
so wrong.
we place the significance on it. Right. And again, part of that is totally valid. Like, of course we want the best for our kids. Like we're going to make effort in those areas to kind of discern what has a potential positive path for them. But it's also interesting because our own parts of our mind that want to define things kind of puts that on, like those choices related to like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. you go French immersion or there's this type of school, this type of school. So that squeeze is out there. That squeeze of judgment and external value is very much a part of our culture. And I think when we focus on the thing, getting back to kind of like, you know, your first big thing there, Annika, is when we focus on the thing, we're kind of almost using that energy of that kind of external validation, as opposed mm-hmm. to just letting whatever internal wants to flow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think in a lot of ways, especially in, you know, kind of relating to having children, you can set your kids up for failure when it's like, you're going to be a pilot. Well, what happens when, you know, either he changes his mind and feels like he's letting you down, or he, you know, loses his job as a pilot and all of a sudden the bottom falls out of his life, right? I think that's this other piece of, you know, continuing this conversation that, you know, your work doesn't have to define you.
Totally. And that's so true. I love what you said that, because I could totally see that. Like, they're like, oh, a pilot. And then the parent gets into it. Yeah, pilot. Yeah. And, you know, and you think about all these things, and then it suddenly it's like the fun isn't there for the kid, because it was a transitory kind of, oh, that's fun, but maybe now it's not. But they look at disappointing you and tie mm-hmm. it together. And then that kind of has that whole other soupy interestingness.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you for saying that experience. So in like the most backwards way you can imagine, because most people, it's like when you tell your parents that you want to be a musician, it's there's a lot of pushback and now you should have a plan B and you should really go into sciences, right? Mine was the opposite. So I grew up in a family of musicians. went from high school into music college. And after a couple of years of working professionally in the industry and going to school in a program that was, there was tons of learning, but wasn't quite the right fit for me. I was in a jazz program and I'm not a jazz singer. And so there was some, you know, stuff there. Anyway, I just kind of got sick of it and I didn't want to. And I remember deciding that I was going to go to chiropractic college. And it was like this huge, nerve-wracking, gut-wrenching, I think I'm going to throw up when I tell my dad that I'm not going to go into music. And to be fair, like my parents hadn't really pressured me, but there was that expectation that because mm-hmm. that's what I'd wanted for so long and they had built around that.
Yeah.
And when I said I was going to change course, they didn't particularly push back against it, but there was this huge internal buildup of fear mm-hmm. of mine because of exactly what you just described. Mm-hmm. And it's a real thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, totally. And I think it happens so, to your point, almost unconsciously. Like it yeah. wasn't your, it wasn't that your dad said, you better be a singer or I'll forever be disappointed in you, right? No. But it's just this pervasive feeling that I think especially if you have, you know, any of those like feelings of like unworthiness or not good enough or constantly, you know, stuff. And like you were saying earlier, looking for that external validation, knowing, feeling like you're going to risk that can feel really scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Really. Yeah. I think that, and sort of bringing that back around to what you said to start with, which had to do with actually defining ourselves by our careers. We rabbit holed down into multiple different streams, but, you as know, defining yourself as we do. But defining ourselves by our careers, that is something that it's a struggle because I think that is the, how everybody, well, I'm making a generalization, but it's like the default position for mm-hmm. most people. Mm-hmm. Hi, I, you know, I'm Sarah. Who are you? What do you do? That's mm-hmm. the, and it's a, even when I rewrote my website last year, I changed it up. So the first thing it says is at heart, I'm a seeker. Because, and I think that was that like bit of a separation of like, here's who I am. Mm-hmm. And over here, here's what I do. But they mm-hmm. are not
mutually exclusive. You know,
they're not the same thing. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I love that. And I think it can be really valuable, you know, the more we can have conversations like this, because I think that's what changes the context is our ability mm-hmm. to have these conversations. And I think part of that is just the way that things are evolving, you know, when you have young kids, you know, it's funny because my husband is actually very much like he's an accountant. And so he went to school to be an accountant and, you know, but even within that, he's done a lot of different things, but you know, I think it'll be interesting to see the way that my daughter continues to think about this growing up, because again, even in school, it's like, what are you going to be when you grow up? Well, how can we shift that narrative to, you know, who are you going to be rather than what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember a story. Oh, I very well could have the details of this wrong, but my recollection of this story is that Julian Lennon, like John Lennon's son, it was one of those school things, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And that his answer was happy. And you know, took that to school and was told, no, you can't answer that.
Sorry, that's not good enough.
Yeah.
How dare you want to be happy? You want to make money is what you want.
Exactly. Yeah. And I might be attributing that wrong, but in my memory, that's attached to Julian Lennon. And I just thought, I mean, that sort of sums up exactly what you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why can't that be the answer?
Right.
What do you want to be doesn't have to be like
a profession. It's a feeling. In fact, yeah, mm-hmm. those are the things that will are more everlasting anyways, you know, yeah. that aspect of feeling. And then there can be lots of different jobs that ends up matching that energy, you know, whether yeah. or not that's happiness or a combination of stuff. Okay, yeah. Cool. That was a good number one. That was a big thing.
I was like, I was like, the other ones are going to feel funny in comparison, but it felt very relevant to open with that. So, kind of this two is a little bit of a bump off of, you know, kind of the time I spent inside the wellness world and some of the, I will be really honest and open, like some of the mistakes that I made, some of the things that I, you know, bought into that I no longer align with, but we know almost nothing about nutrition and weight is not a marker for health. And I think it's really, again, like having spent a lot of time in the wellness world, it's like sugar is evil and processed foods are bad and, you know, red meat is bad, but you also don't want to eat fake meat because that's not good, right? It's just this very moralization of food. The reality is we know almost nothing about nutrition. Even this kind of like pervasive thought within society that like, it's just weight is calories in and calories out. You want to lose weight, you just eat less. It doesn't actually work like that because our bodies aren't machines. Our bodies actually are bodies. And there's so many other things layered on top of that. But I think that's a really tricky one because, again, to this polarization that we constantly see, it's easier if things are good or bad. Good foods, bad foods, virtuous foods, evil foods. The reality is it's just not that simple.
Yeah, I like that. And it's a theme with the first one. And I think it's like, if you're in conclusion, no matter what you're in conclusion about, then that's a limited point of view. And I love that term, like the moralization of food, because totally it's like, it's like every time there's like a squeeze and things become solid and that's a conclusion and that's not conducive. And I like that because what I like is that idea that we always get to choose again, right? And because you mentioned, you know, we make a lot of mistakes, but really, you know, as you know, just kind of learning. But I think so many things are often tied down this path in the sense of like, well, if I choose that, that means all of those things, right? Or if I choose that, that means all of those things. And I can't, you know. But if you choose again, you're kind of narrowing it down to just what that choice is in front of you, not the significant or whatever kind of is tied to it. And because the same thing, like I've personally gone through like, you know what? Vegan, that makes sense. I'm going to try that. Okay, I choose. And then, you know, watched Game Changer on Netflix a few times. I don't know if you've seen that show. You're just like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, I'm going to be. And then you're like, nah, I don't know. Say my body, I think, wants something different than I eat meat. Oh, you know, and you kind of go down this thing. And we try to put ourselves in those boxes, I think, often too.
Yeah.
But if we can slow down and choose again and take the judgment out of it, then I think that's where the real potential to grow lies. Knowing that we can totally choose again in the sense that it's okay that for 1 6 months or year period, you might eat totally differently than a year from now. And what I'm eating now, though, isn't wrong. It's not that I suddenly figured out a year from now what the right one was.
Right.
It's you just that whatever was
now you're
kind
right.
of... Yeah, exactly. It's the rightness and wrongness.
Good. Yeah.
And that's why I love you use the word moralization of it, because that's totally it, right? The right and wrong. You know, it's either one, you know, and but true growth doesn't seem that's not a function of true growth. That it like function of really growing is being present and choosing what's right for you kind of in that moment. And to do so is kind of, there's an embedded willingness to change and choose again if we're really going to let ourselves grow that way.
And know that different choices are appropriate at different times.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and that's the other kind of piece of this, right? Is it becomes this judgment, Stefan, like you were talking about, is really gets wrapped up in all of this. Like, you know, processed food is bad or convenience food is bad, when the reality is sometimes that's all people can afford. Sometimes that's all people have time for. You know, sometimes that's what people crave. And actually, none of that is a bad reason to buy canned corn or, you know, frozen pizza pops or whatever that looks like. I think when we try to, you know, and I think like you were mentioning, Stefan, like, you know, when we see something like the Game Changers, it's like, you know, we're a machine and here's how we fuel the machine. But the reality is we're not actually machines. We're so complicated. We're really big, complicated meat sacks that need different things and that respond differently to different things for me than for you than for somebody else. And I think when we acknowledge that there tends to often be privilege baked into that, you know, that you have the bandwidth and the space to be thinking about something other than just how you're going to put food on the table or how you're going to pay your rent this month or, you know, how you're going to survive. I think it's okay if you want to choose that for yourself, but where we start to bake in this moralization, it's really unhelpful, especially culturally, for people for whom are doing the literal best they can with whatever they have in whatever that looks like.
Totally. Yeah. Well said. It's the shoulds, you know, and it, and I think we all, we can't speak for everybody, but I know I've gone to the grocery store, you know, and come in and being like, oh my God, is someone going to judge me because I've got oatmeal cookies here?
You know, like, I hope I don't run into anyone I know with my food on the conveyor.
Well, exactly. Right? Like, I'm a health practitioner. Like, oh my gosh, are they going to see these cinnamon buns? And, so yeah, so I can feel it. I know a lot of that is my own journey, but it is obviously kind of picked up from the environment and that judgment of right or wrong and that almost imbued shaming of just like, oh, you know, like, oh, you're giving your kids that type of energy. And obviously it's easy to talk about from afar, but that doesn't help anybody. Mm-hmm. So it is an interesting, there's a lot of interesting there. Anyways, continue.
Well, and I think this is something else that I love to talk about a lot is, you know, especially when we're looking at that moralization piece and when we're looking at privilege and access, it starts to be like somebody is judging, you know, you for the cinnamon buns on the conveyor belt rather than looking at the system and saying, you know, how can we make produce more affordable? How can we create a system that is more sustainable for the planet? You know, those large questions that actually are the ones we probably should be looking at. It's like, no, we're just instead going to look at individual solutions for what is actually a collective problem or what we should be looking for collective solutions for.
Yeah.
No, it's true.
I think that can be hard to, until it becomes personal for you. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes that's hard to put yourself in those shoes. You know, like a couple things have intersected for us in my house over the past year, let's say. I started budgeting. So I was, I follow our expenses and budget our expenses, like really specifically, not just a sort of general overview. So suddenly I discovered how much we spend on groceries every month. Uh-huh. And for two, and I know, cause you know, I've done that over time, but the difference in what we spend on groceries now versus pre-pandemic is quite a thing. Mm-hmm. For a two-person household, we spend somewhere between $1,000 and $1,200 a month on groceries. And that's like horrific to me that food costs that much. And we don't eat fancy. But what's been interesting is that my work schedule has shifted over the last couple of months. It went from being where I worked some and then I had time in the evenings and, you know, my husband works long days. So it was me in this season of our lives who spends the time in the kitchen. It's been different at other seasons in our lives, but, and so I had the time and capacity to be making everything from scratch. So I made our chicken fingers from scratch rather than buying chicken fingers and, you know, whatever, things like that. Everything I was making, and I made the mistake of saying I was making real food. Yeah, that's, we're talking about that piece right now. But, you know, I made, like, everything was whole food based. It wasn't processed foods. It wasn't, and I felt really good about that. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at the grocery bill and also realized that, like, we don't buy fancy things. So the only way to actually shift that is to buy different food. Mm-hmm. And it intersected with me getting more busy and not having as much time and capacity to make meals from scratch in the kitchen. So there's more frozen pizzas and there's more frozen chicken fingers and there's more things like that, you know, in our diet and in our fridge and freezer right now, and our grocery bill has gone down.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And that's horrendous to me.
Right. Right. It's this, and it becomes this.
I think that's, and that's a snapshot of.
Yeah. 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 It becomes this prescriptive privilege, right? Like, you have to feed your kids homemade chicken fingers. You have to put, you know, X amount of produce a day into your body, where, you know, are those like nice ideas? Maybe, but it's not actually helpful to you know, put that on people, when the reality is grocery costs for everybody are bonkers right now and probably not getting better anytime soon. So where does that leave access? Where does that leave choice, you know?
Yep. Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, goodness me, stepping into a produce market to just go do your produce shopping, like, that is an exercise in any of the words, you know,
and that is an exercise. And
but it's just what you said, like, okay, we're supposed to eat more fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great, but there is everything so expensive that when we add the reality of time, capacity, and finance, and you intersect that with, like, the morality of food, like, we've created this church of food, and those things do not intersect well.
No. And I think, yeah, it's like, if we were able to slow down, which is almost, it seems like an impossibility with every choice, and be like, if there was no judgment, what would I choose? Because that's also like the judgment we place on ourselves and the judgment that's inherent out there. Because that would embody then everything of the, well, I want nutritious stuff to go in my kid's body, but that's not always an attainable goal. So what's the best kind of thing given everything in the current moment? And that's where it's going to be likely a mix. Like, I know, like, again, I look at my grocery cart and stuff, and it's like a pretty, like, bipolar at times, like, in terms of, like, wow, okay, whoa,
we
is this
balance.
Like, there's a lot going on
balance.
Here.
It's fine.
You know, you're right. Completely opposites balancing out. I love that. That's exactly pretty much what it is. You meet in the middle. There you go. That's your podcast.
See what I did there?
So, yeah, it is interesting, because I think, again, this conversation really lets us know how much kind of inherent judgment, shoulds, supposed tos are prevalent out there. And in certain areas, they're even more pronounced. And I think with stuff like diet or things like our kids, that really there's an added quote unquote significance. And I think with significance also comes judgment, because it's, again, it's some sort of squeeze of stuff.
Yeah. So it's all tied up in, and even further complicated by, this idea that, like, bigger bodies are unhealthy bodies, smaller bodies are healthier bodies. Mm-hmm. If you're in a bigger body and you've got those cinnamon buns on the, you know, grocery conveyor belt, like, that judgment shows up 10 times more, when the reality is it's the same choicing, and the size of our body actually doesn't tell us how healthy we are. Society will tell us otherwise, but that's actually not the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, speaking as someone who has lived most of my life in a bigger body, I know that all of those pressures go into when I am making food choices. Well, I know intellectually that sometimes emotion-based food choices, I don't even want to say sometimes, but emotion-based food choices, that is a valid reason to make a food choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
That becomes a lot harder to sit in when you also sit in a bigger body and feel that judgment and place that judgment on yourself.
Yes.
So I'm feeling needy, sad, angry, whatever. So I want to eat the cookie, or in fact, I want to eat the whole pan of cookies. That, while I recognize that that wouldn't be a great thing for me to do three meals a day every day. I also struggle with allowing myself to make that choice, knowing that sometimes that is a really good way to feed my emotional body.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it shouldn't be the only tool in my toolkit, but it's okay that it's one of them.
Well, and I think, you know, some of that is we had this demonization of the idea of like, you know, oh, you're eating for comfort. Well, that's actually okay. It's actually okay mm-hmm. if that's a tool in your toolbox to comfort yourself. If we were just machines and all food was like the, you know, amino acid chain to fuel our bodies. I mean, we could have already put that into pill form by now, probably, but food is so much more than that. It is cultural. It is social. It is tied up in our, you know,
it's an experience.
Memories of our family. Yeah. It's pleasure, you know? And I think that, again, I mean, that's a whole separate tangent. We don't even need to go there. But this idea that, like, God forbid you get pleasure out of your food. Oh, my God. God forbid eating the cookies brings you pleasure. You know, you're just succumbing to, you know, you're weak, right? Where the reality is actually you're supporting yourself. And that's actually okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boy, we are a layered people.
Okay, so number three.
Third thing.
Third and final tangent. Third and final rabbit hole we're going to go down this is very much a general, although like specific to like the place in my 20s where I kind of like fell off of everything. Take a few extra minutes to pay attention to politics and government. Especially if you have kids, pay attention to elections around you. Bring your kids with you. Borrow somebody else's kid if they're not going to bring them with them. The system does a terrible job of teaching us this. So like the context in the background for me is I have a degree in women's studies and political science, and surprisingly graduating in 2003 with a double major in women's studies and political science was not a fast track to a career. Hence like my number one off of the hop. But it was almost like when I realized all I was going to be able to do was like, you know, find a meandering new way through, you know, retail and then inventory management and then, you know, product and merchandise planning. It was like, okay, well, I guess I just have to abandon those things. I could never really abandon being a feminist. It's like a core piece of who I am. But it was like, okay, well, I just don't, I guess I don't do that anymore. When the reality is, it's absolutely a core piece of who I am. And I think the thing for me that I see so often is, you know, people are like, oh, it's, you know, I don't pay attention to politics, or it's too much, it's too confusing to keep track of it all. But the reality is that kind of apathy tends to prelude this inability to have these really balanced, meet me in the middle kind of conversations around politics, because if you don't know, then you either A, trust what you hear from somebody else who seems passionate about it, or B, disengage completely from the conversation, which also I think leads to this further polarization. Because if the only people you have paying attention to political issues are people who are passionate on one side or the other, then those are the only voices you hear. When the reality is most people live in the middle, I think especially as Canadians. One of the beauties of not being a two-party system, of having multiple political parties, is you can find yourself supporting different parties at different times. Your identity isn't wrapped up in whether you're, you know, a Democrat or a Republican. You can take the pieces that you align with. And I think even if you can find those like local issues to tune into, maybe it's climate change, maybe it's racism, maybe it's, you know, yes, they're huge topics, but if you're paying attention to that, even just in your local area, that's going to give you something. That's going to give you something to pay attention to and to move forward into.
I have appreciated you so much in this realm, because I am someone who finds art I find politics confusing at best.
Yes, because you were not taught it, because the system does a terrible job of teaching us this. I was not, and that's not your fault.
You know, I was somewhere in high school. I was taught like the legislature and the what. I still couldn't tell you what the actual form of government, how our government fits together in Canada or the U.S. And it's totally different in the U.S. But I can't tell you either one of them. And because in media we are subjected to American politics so much more, that feels more familiar to me than Canadian politics does. But when we have come to election time, like the most recent one, you were so beneficial. And I believe this was around the time that you changed your Instagram bio to read your political bestie, because Annika put up in a series of stories every day, and she would go through like the issues, and you were really coming at it from the perspective of, I know that I have A, bias, and B, all of the sources that I'm getting this information from have bias, but here's the information and here are the relevant pieces of the bias that goes into it, so that you, but you like disseminated all that down into a super digestible form for me. I mean, you weren't just doing it for me, let's be clear, but.
But it's helpful to know that it's helpful. So go on, regale me some more with how helpful it was.
I intentionally went to your stories every day during that time, because that was the best source of information that I had. That was so informative, and in such a way that you were being really transparent about any bias, because so much of the information out there is like, well, this is good over here, but you know, that's coming from a very one-sided view. So yeah. I think that that was incredibly, incredibly useful and one of your superpowers.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. That's so kind of you to say. I think, yeah, anybody who tells you that they don't have bias or that something is impartial or they have an impartial view of something, turn tail and run the opposite direction, because it doesn't exist. Yeah, and the more you can find sources that are honest and upfront about it, it doesn't change the information, but it changes the way that you are going to perceive and look at it. And that's that critical thinking piece. I think that, you know, when our focus, to your point, is like, here's the mechanics of government, rather than, you know, here's how you look at a complicated issue. Here's how you physically go and vote, you know, those pieces that maybe we're missing. I think that's a piece of kind of drawing it back in.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and that's a very good point. I think just in general, like the number three, your number three big thing in terms of paying attention to things, because I know I've kind of turned a blind eye at times. It's like, well, politicians are that, blah, blah, nah, right? But then, you know, we're dismissing a very potent avenue for change, you know, where we can actually kind of have a say.
Yes.
And I think especially in the States, like, it is funny because I think we do sometimes follow it because it's this dichotomy. It's like two options, right? Like the lesser of two evils, or I think what's the saying, the evil of two lessers, right? When you have like two politicians that are both like, just like, oh, come on. Right. So you're just like, no, I'm not going to go there. And, but does that really help move us forward, right? And because there's degrees, right? So, you know, you might be more interested in politics than other people, and there's no wrongness either way. But I think we can very easily just block ourselves and be completely unaware, and that doesn't help either, right? And I like that. And I think, and I think it's, again, what you said, it's okay that we're not, again, like, well, if I'm this, then I'm supposed to be all of those parts of the club, right? Like, well, if I'm a conservative, liberal, or NDP or something, or Green Party, then I have to be all those things. And then I think sometimes people get turned, like, they're like, well, I don't, maybe some of them, but maybe not all of them. So I don't know, Netflix, right? And just kind of just distract themselves and go a different direction.
Yeah.
So 100%. I like that one.
And I love that. Like, it is, I think a lot of times people think in relation to like elections and voting, like, it's not, you're not dating them. you're not marrying them.
Right.
Sometimes it is literally the least worst option. It's your vote isn't a love letter, right? It's, and I think when,
but it's almost framed that way. That's what's so funny, right? With the political kind of thing, it's just like, look at me. Anyways, yes,
totally. Yeah. And I think to exactly that point, it's like, if you're waiting for the perfect politician who's going to, you know, completely align with everything you believe, then you're never ever, then you will forever be overwhelmed and sit on the sideline and choose Netflix instead. And again, that's okay. I choose Netflix a lot too. But, you know, I think this constant focus on global connectedness, while is great, you know, it will feel less overwhelming and more impactful if you can even just check in periodically with things that you are interested in your area, because it will just make it that much more straightforward when the time comes for you to have to make a choice. And I am and will always be very passionate that it is absolutely our right and privilege to live in a place where we are given a voice and a vote. And there is no reason not to use that. If your reason not to use it is I don't like anybody, then you got to do a little bit more research. I voted for people I don't like for. But I didn't like them less than I liked to dislike somebody else. So,
right. There's a tool that I think it's been in federal elections that this has come up, but there's been a website where you could go and you have to answer a series of questions. And it took some time, but you answer a series of questions and you can go sort of one level, or you can say, I want to answer more about this subject or whatever. And at the end of the whole thing, it says, here's who you align. Here are the candidates that you align most closely with based on your answers. And that has been a really useful tool for me.
Yeah, it's called Vote Compass, and it will exist federally. Sometimes it shows up provincially, but when the time comes for another federal election, seek out Vote Compass because it can be very helpful. Also, while it is US-based, the site All Sides Now is very helpful because it will always show you the bias rating of the information. So it'll be like, let's look at this particular topic, and it's American. So, you know, let's look at Biden's speech, and it'll show you how it was covered in a right-rated outlet, how it was covered in a left-rated outlet, and how it was covered by a center-rated outlet. And that allows us to start to refine that critical thinking piece that, you know, I think, again, it's easy to just kind of put to the side, because it's work and it's overwhelming, but it's also our responsibility.
Agreed.
Yeah. Well said.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Annika. This has been awesome. Where can people find you?
Thank you, guys. This has been awesome. I love conversations like this. Instagram is always the best place. My handle is just my name. And that's where I tend to spend most of my time these days. So you can find me there. And then, of course, my podcast, Meet Me in the Middle. Seek that out on all of your podcasting platforms. And thanks again, you guys. This has been so fun.
This has been awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Annika. This has been awesome. It's important to have these discussions, and I really appreciate the point of views you brought to them. Those are some good big threes. Yeah. I like it.
Good big threes.
All right, everybody. Bye. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
See you then. Thanks for joining our conversation today.
You can head over to thisbiglifepodcast.com for all the show notes and information.
If you loved what you heard here today, would you do us a favor and rate and review the show? It helps more people just like you discover these juicy conversations.
And if you know someone you think would love this particular episode, you can even go ahead and share it with them right now.
And if you have a topic you would love to hear us discuss, or someone you think would make a great guest for our show, you can submit your ideas using the link in the show notes.
And you can always find us on Instagram at This Big Life Podcast.
Thanks again. We'll be right back here in your ears next Tuesday.
See you then.